a life. Her soul found his. That's beautiful. Bill scratched at a scab on his arm with a gnarly claw.
If you say so.
You said Daniel was involved in the sacrifice somehow. He's a ball player, isn't he? Lou said, craning her neck toward the crowd, just as Daniel disappeared inside the amphitheater.
He is, Bill said. There's a lovely little ceremony.
He raised a stone eyebrow.
In which the winners guide the sacrifices into their next life.
The winners kill the prisoners? Lou said quietly. They watched the crowd as it funneled into the amphitheater. Drumbeats sounded from within. The game was about to begin.
Not kill. They're not common murderers. Sacrifice. First they chop off the heads. Heads go back there.
Bill nodded over his shoulder at the palisade of heads.
Bodies get tossed into a scuzzy, pardon me, holy limestone sinkhole out in the jungle.
He sniffed.
Me? I don't see how that's going to bring rain, but who am I to judge?
Will Daniel win or lose? Luce asked, knowing the answer before the words had even left her lips.
I can see how the idea of Daniel decapitating you does not maybe scream out romance, Bill said. But really, what's the difference between his killing you by fire and by the sword?
Daniel wouldn't do that. Bill hovered in the air in front of Luce.
Wouldn't he?
There came a great roar from inside the amphitheater. Luce felt that she should run onto the field, go up to Daniel and take him in her arms, tell him what she'd left the globe too soon to say, that she understood now everything he went through to be with her. That his sacrifices made her even more committed to their love. I should go to him, she said. But there was also Ishkuat, locked up in a room atop the pyramid, waiting to be killed. A girl who might hold within her a valuable piece of information Luce needed to learn to break the curse. Luce teetered in place, one foot toward the amphitheater, one toward the pyramid.
What's it gonna be? Bill taunted.
His smile was too big. She took off running, away from Bill and toward the pyramid.
Good choice, he called,
flitting quickly around to keep pace at her side. The pyramid towered over her. The painted temple at the top, where Bill had said Ishkuat would be, felt as distant as a star. Luce was so thirsty. Her throat ached for water. The ground scorched the soles of her feet. It felt like the entire world was burning up.
This place is very sacred, Bill murmured in her ear. This temple was built on top of a previous temple, which was built on top of yet another temple, and so on, all of them oriented to mark the vernal and autumnal equinoxes. On those 2 days at sunset, the shadow of a serpent can be seen sliding up the steps of the northern stairs. Cool, huh?
Luce just huffed and began climbing the stairs.
The Mayans were geniuses. By this point in their civilization, they've already predicted the end of the world in 2012.
He coughed theatrically.
But that remains to be seen. Time will tell.
As Luce neared the top, Bill swooped in close again.
Now, listen, he said. This time, if and when you go 3D.
Shh, Luce said.
No one can hear me but you.
Exactly.
Shh.
She took another step up the pyramid, quietly now, and stood on the ledge at the top. She pressed her body against the hot stone of the temple wall, inches away from the open doorway. Someone inside was singing.
I'd do it now, Bill said, while the guards are at the ball court.
Luce edged to the doorway and peered in. The sunlight streaming through the open door lit up a large throne in the center of the temple. It was shaped like a jaguar and painted red, with spots of inlaid jade. To the left was a large statue of a figure reclining on its side with a hand over its stomach. Small burning lamps made of stone and filled with oil surrounded the statue and cast a flickering light. The only other things in the room were three girls bound together at the wrists by rope, huddled in the corner. Luce gasped, and all three girls' heads shot up. They were all pretty, with dark hair and braids, and jade piercings through their ears.
The one on the left had the darkest skin. The one on the right had deep blue swirling lines painted up and down her arms. And the one in the middle was loose. Ishkuat was small and delicate. Her feet were dirty and her lips were chapped. Of the three terrified girls, her dark eyes were the wildest.
"What are you waiting for?" Bill called out from his seat on the statue's head.
"Won't they see me?" Luce whispered through a clenched jaw. The other times she'd cleaved with her past selves, they'd either been alone or Bill had helped to shield her. What would it look like to these other girls if Luce went inside Ishkuat's body?
"These girls have been half mad since they got selected to be sacrificed. If they cry out about any freaky business, guess how many people are going to care?"
Bill made a show of counting on his fingers.
"Right, zero. No one's even going to hear them."
"Who are you?"
one of the girls asked, her voice splintered with fear. Luce couldn't answer. As she stepped forward, Ishkuat's eyes ignited with what looked like terror. But then, to Luce's great shock, just as she reached down, her past self reached up with her bound hands and grabbed fast and hard to Luce's. Ishkuat's hands were warm and soft and trembling. She started to say something. Ishkuat had started to say, "Fly me away." Luce heard it in her mind as the ground beneath them shuddered and everything began to flicker. She saw Ishkuat, the girl who'd been born unlucky, whose eyes told Luce she knew nothing about the announcers, but who had seized hold of Luce as if Luce held her deliverance. And she saw herself, from outside herself, looking tired and hungry and ragged and rough, and older somehow, and stronger. Then the world settled again. Bill was gone from the statue's head, but Luce couldn't move to search for him. Her bound wrists were raw and marked with black sacrificial tattoos. Her ankles, she realized, had been bound too. Not that the bindings mattered much. Fear bound her soul more tightly than any rope ever could. This wasn't like the other times Luce had gone inside her past. Ishkuat knew exactly what was coming to her. Death. And she did not seem to welcome it, as Lee had in Versailles. On either side of Ishkuat, her co-captives had edged away from her, but they could move only a few inches. The girl on the left, with the dark skin, Han Huao, was crying. The other, with the painted blue body, the nun, was praying. They were all afraid to die.
"You are possessed,"
Han Huao sobbed through her tears.
"You will contaminate the offering."
Ganan was at a loss for words. Luce ignored the girls and felt around Ishkuat's own crippling fear. Something was running through her mind, a prayer, but not a prayer of sacrificial preparation. No, Ishkuat was praying for Daniel. Luce knew that the thought of him made Ishkuat's skin flush and her heart beat faster. Ishkuat had loved him her whole life, but only from afar. He'd grown up a few buildings away from her family's home. Sometimes he traded avocados to her mother at the market. Ishkuat had been trying for years to get up the courage to talk to him. The knowledge that he was at the ball court now tormented her. Ishkuat was praying, Luce realized, that he would lose. Her one prayer was that she did not want to die at his hand.
"Bill,"
Luce whispered. The little gargoyle swooped back inside the temple.
"Game's over. The mob's heading over to the cenote now. That's the limestone pool where the sacrificing takes place. Zoths and the winning players are on their way up here to walk you gals over to the ceremony."
As the din of the mob faded, Luce trembled. There were footsteps on the stairs. Any moment now, Daniel would walk through that door. Three shadows darkened the doorway. Zotz, the leader with the red and white feathered headdress, stepped inside the temple. None of the girls moved. They were all staring in horror at the long decorative spear he held. A human head was spiked atop it. The eyes were open, crossed with strain. The neck was still dripping blood. Luce looked away, and her eyes fell on another, very muscular man entering the tomb. He was carrying another painted spear, with another head impaled on its top. At least this one's eyes were closed. There was the faintest smile across the fat, dead lips.
"The losers, Bill said, zipping close to each of the heads to examine them. Now, aren't you glad Daniel's team won? Mostly thanks to this guy. He clapped the muscular man on the shoulder, though Daniel's teammate didn't seem to feel a thing. Then Bill was out the door again. When Daniel walked into the temple at last, his head was hanging. His hands were empty, and his chest was bare. His hair and skin were dark, and his posture was stiffer than Luce was used to. Everything, from the way the muscles of his abdomen met the muscles of his chest, to the way he held his hands lifelessly at his sides, was different. He was still gorgeous, still the most gorgeous thing Luce had ever seen, though he looked nothing like the boy whom Luce had gotten used to. But then he glanced up, and his eyes glowed exactly the same shade of violet that they always did. "Oh," she said softly, thrashing against her bindings, desperate to escape the story they were stuck in during this lifetime, the skulls and the drought and the sacrifice, and hold on to him for all eternity. Daniel shook his head slightly. His eyes pulsed at her, glowing. His gaze soothed her, like he was telling her not to worry. Zatz motioned with his free hand for the three girls to stand, then gave a swift nod, and everyone filed out through the northern door of the temple. Han Huo first, with Zatz at her side, Luce right behind her, and Ganan bringing up the rear. The rope between them was just long enough for each girl to hold both wrists together at her side. Daniel came up and walked beside her, and the other victor walked beside Ganan. For the briefest instant, Daniel's fingertips grazed her bound wrists. Ishkuat tingled at the touch. Just outside the temple door, the four drummers were waiting on the ledge. They fell in line behind the processional, and, as the party descended the pyramid's steep steps, played the same hectic beats Luce had heard when she'd first arrived in this life. Luce focused on walking, feeling as if she were riding a tide, instead of choosing to put one foot in front of the other, down the pyramid, and then, at the base of the steps, along the wide, dusty path that led to her death. The drums were all she could hear until Daniel leaned in and whispered, "I'm going to save you." Something deep inside Ishkuat soared. This was the first time he'd ever spoken to her in this life. "How?" she whispered back, leaning toward him, aching for him to free her and fly her far, far away.
"Don't worry."
His fingertips found hers again, brushing them softly.
"I promise I'll take care of you."
Tears stung her eyes. The ground was still searing the soles of her feet, and she was still marching to the place where Ishkuat was supposed to die. But for the first time since arriving in this life, Luce was not afraid. The path led through a line of trees and into the jungle. The drummers paused. Chanting filled her ears, the chants of the crowd deeper in the jungle, at the cenote. A song that Ishkuat had grown up singing, a prayer for rain. The other two girls sang along softly, their voices quaking. Luce thought of the words Ishkuat had seemed to say as Luce entered her body. "Fly me away," she'd shouted inside her head. "Fly me away." All at once, they stopped walking. Deep in the dried-out, thirsty jungle, the path before them opened up. A huge, water-filled crater in the limestone spanned 100 feet in front of Luce. Around it were the bright, eager eyes of the Mayan people. Hundreds. They'd stopped chanting. The moment they'd been waiting for was here. The cenote was a limestone pit, mossy and deep and filled with bright green water. Ishkuat had been there before. She'd seen 12 other human sacrifices just like this one. Below that still water were the decomposing remains of 100 other bodies, 100 souls who were supposed to have gone straight to heaven. Only, at that moment, Luce knew that Ishkuat wasn't sure she believed in any of it. Ishkuat's family stood near the rim of the cenote. Her mother, her father, her 2 younger sisters, both holding babies in their arms. They believed in the ritual, in the sacrifice that would take their daughter away and break their hearts. They loved her, but they thought she was unlucky. They thought this was the best way for her to redeem herself. A gap-toothed man with long gold earrings guided Ishkuat and the other 2 girls to stand before Zatz, who had taken a prominent place near the edge of the limestone pool. He gazed down into the deep water.
Then he closed his eyes and began a new chant. The community and the drummers joined in. Now the gap-toothed man stood between Luce and Ganon and brought down his axe on the rope tying them together. Luce felt a jerk forward and the rope was severed. Her wrists were still bound, but she was now connected only to Han Hua on her right. Ganon was on her own, marched forward directly in front of Zod's. The girl rocked back and forth, chanting under her breath. Sweat trickled down the back of her neck. When Zotz began to say words of prayer to the rain god, Daniel leaned toward Luce.
Don't look.
So Luce fastened her gaze on Daniel, and he on her. All around the cenote, the crowd drew in their breaths. Daniel's teammate grunted and brought the axe down heavily on the girl's neck. Luce heard the blade slice cleanly through, then the soft thump of Ganon's head landing in the dirt. The roar of the crowd rose up again, shouts of thanks to Ganon, prayers for her soul in heaven, vigorous wishes for rain. How could people really think that killing an innocent girl would solve their problems? This is where Bill would usually pop in. But Luce didn't see him anywhere. He had a way of disappearing when Daniel came around. Luce didn't want to see what had become of Ganon's head. Then she heard a deep, reverberating splash and knew that the girl's body had reached its final resting place. The gap-toothed man approached. This time he severed Ishkuat's bond to Han Hua. Luce trembled as he marched her before the tribal leader. The rocks were sharp beneath her feet. She peered over the limestone rim into the cenote. She thought she might be sick, but then Daniel appeared at her side, and she felt better. He nodded for her to look at Zotz. The tribal leader beamed at her, showing two topazes set into his front teeth. He intoned a prayer that Chot would accept her and bring the community many months of nourishing rainfall. No, Luce thought. It was all wrong. Fly me away, she cried out to Daniel in her head. He turned toward her, almost as if he'd heard. The gap-toothed man cleaned Ganon's blood off the axe with a scrap of animal hide. With great pomp, he handed the blade to Daniel, who turned to stand face to face with Luce. Daniel looked weary, as if dragged down by the weight of the axe. His lips were pursed and white, and his violet gaze never left hers. The crowd was silent, holding their breaths. Hot wind rustled in the trees as the axe gleamed in the sun. Luce could feel that the end was coming. But why? Why had her soul dragged her here? What insight about her past, or the curse, could she possibly gain from having her head cut off? Then Daniel dropped the axe to the ground. "What are you doing?" Luce asked. Daniel didn't answer. He rolled back his shoulders, turned his face toward the sky, and flung out his arms. Zotz stepped forward to interfere, but when he touched Daniel's shoulder, he screamed and recoiled, as if he'd been burned. And then Daniel's white wings unfurled from his shoulders. As they extended fully from his sides, huge and shockingly bright against the parched brown landscape, they sent 20 Mayans hurtling backward. Shouts rang out around the cenote.
What is he? The boy is winged.
He is a god, sent to us by Chot.
Luce thrashed against the ropes binding her wrists and her ankles. She needed to run to Daniel. She tried to move toward him until she couldn't move anymore. Daniel's wings were so bright, they were almost unbearable. Only, now it wasn't just Daniel's wings that were glowing. It was all of him. His entire body shone, as if he'd swallowed the sun. Music filled the air. No, not music, but a single harmonious chord. Deafening and unending, glorious and frightening. Luce had heard it before, somewhere. In the cemetery at Sword and Cross, the last night she'd been there, the night Daniel had fought Cam and Luce hadn't been allowed to watch. The night Miss Sophia had dragged her away, and Penn had died, and nothing had ever been the same. It had begun with that very same chord, and it was coming out of Daniel. He was lit up so brightly, his body actually hummed. She swayed where she stood, unable to take her eyes away. An intense wave of heat stroked her skin. Behind Luce, someone cried out. The cry was followed by another, and then another, and then a whole chorus of voices crying out. Something was burning. It was acrid and choking, and turned her stomach instantly. Then, in the corner of her vision, there was an explosion of flame, right where Zatz had been standing a moment before. The boom knocked her backward, and she turned away from the burning brightness of Daniel, coughing on the black ash and bitter smoke. Hanhua was gone, the ground where she'd stood scorched black. The gap-toothed man was hiding his face, trying hard not to look at Daniel's radiance. But it was irresistible. Luce watched as the man peeked between his fingers and burst into a pillar of flame. All around the cenote, the Mayans stared at Daniel, and one by one his brilliance set them ablaze. Soon a bright ring of fire lit up the jungle, lit up everyone but Luce.
Ishguat!
Daniel reached for her. His glow made Luce scream out in pain, but even as she felt as if she were on the verge of asphyxiation, the words tumbled from her mouth.
You're glorious.
Don't look at me, he pleaded. When a mortal sees an angel's true essence, then you can see what happened to the others. I can't let you leave me again so soon. Always so soon.
I'm still here, Luce insisted.
You're still, he was crying. Can you see me? The true me?
I can see you.
And for just a fraction of a second, she could. Her vision cleared. His glow was still radiant, but not so blinding. She could see his soul. It was white-hot and immaculate, and it looked, there was no other way to say it, like Daniel. And it felt like coming home. A rush of unparalleled joy spread through Luce. Somewhere in the back of her mind, a bell of recognition chimed. She'd seen him like this before. Hadn't she? As her mind strained to draw upon the past she couldn't quite touch, the light of him began to overwhelm her.
No!
She cried, feeling the fire sear her heart and her body shake free of something.
Well?
Bill's scratchy voice grated on her eardrums. She lay against a cold stone slab. Back in one of the announcer caves, trapped in a frigid in-between place, where it was hard to hold on to anything outside. Desperately, she tried to picture what Daniel had looked like out there, the glory of his undisguised soul, but she couldn't. It was already slipping away from her. Had it really even happened? Luce closed her eyes, trying to remember exactly what he'd looked like. There were no words for it. It was just an incredible, joyous connection.
I saw him.
Oh, Daniel? Yeah, I saw him, too. He was the guy who dropped the axe when it was his turn to do the chopping. Big mistake. Huge.
No, I really saw him, as he truly is.
Her voice shook.
He was so beautiful.
Oh, that.
Bill tossed his head, annoyed.
I recognized him. I think I've seen him before.
Doubt it.
Bill coughed.
That was the first and last time you'll be able to see him like that. You saw him, and then you died. That's what happens when mortal flesh looks upon an angel's unbridled glory. Instant death. Burned away by the angel's beauty.
No, it wasn't like that.
You saw what happened to everyone else. Poof! Gone.
Bill plopped down beside her and patted her knee.
Why do you think the Mayans started doing sacrifices by fire after that? A neighboring tribe discovered the charred remains and had to explain it somehow.
Yes, they burst into flames right away, but I lasted longer.
A couple of extra seconds? When you were turned away? Congratulations.
You're wrong, and I know I've seen that before.
You've seen his wings before, maybe. But Daniel shedding his human guise and showing you his true form as an angel kills you every time.
No.
Luce shook her head.
You're saying he can never show me who he really is?
Bill shrugged.
Not without vaporizing you and everyone around you. Why do you think Daniel's so cautious about kissing you all the time? His glory shines pretty damn bright when you two get hot and heavy.
Luce felt like she could barely hold herself up.
That's why I sometimes die when we kiss.
How about a round of applause for the girl, folks?
Bill said snarkily. But what about all those other times, when I die before we kiss, before...
Before you even have a chance to see how toxic your relationship might become?
Shut up.
Honestly, how many times do you have to see the same storyline before you realize nothing is ever going to change?
Something has changed, Lou said. That's why I'm on this journey. That's why I'm still alive. If I could just see him again, all of him, I know I could handle it.
You don't get it. Bill's voice was rising. You're talking about this whole thing in very mortal terms.
As he grew more agitated, spit flew from his lips.
This is the big time, and you clearly cannot handle it.
Why are you so angry all of a sudden?
Because...
He paced the ledge, gnashing his teeth.
Listen to me. Daniel slipped up this once. He showed himself, but he never does that again. Never. He learned his lesson. Now you've learned one, too. Mortal flesh cannot gaze upon an angel's true form without dying.
Luce turned away from him, growing angrier herself. Maybe Daniel changed after this lifetime in Chichen Itza. Maybe he'd become more cautious in the future. But what about the past? She approached the limit of the ledge inside the announcer, looking up into the vast, gaping blackness that tunneled above into her dark unknown. Bill hovered over her, circling her head, as if he were trying to get inside it.
I know what you're thinking, and you're only going to end up disappointed.
He drew close to her ear and whispered,
Or worse.
There was nothing he could say to stop her. If there was an earlier Daniel who still dropped his guard, then Luce was going to find him. 16. Best Man. Jerusalem, Israel, 27 Nisan, 2760. Approximately April 1, 1000 BCE. Daniel was not entirely himself. He was still cloven to the body he'd joined with on the dark fjords of Greenland. He tried to slow down as he left the announcer, but his momentum was too great. Heavily off balance, he spun out of the darkness and rolled across rocky earth until his head slammed into something hard. Then he was still. Cleaving with his past self had been a vast mistake. The simplest way to split apart two entwined incarnations of a soul was to kill the body. Freed from the cage of the flesh, the soul sorted itself out. But killing himself wasn't really an option for Daniel. Unless... the star shot. In Greenland, he had snatched it from where it lay nestled in the snow at the edge of the angel's fire. Gabby had brought it along as symbolic protection, but she would never have expected Daniel to cleave and steal it. Had he really thought he could just drag the dull silver tip across his chest and split apart his soul, casting his past self back into time? Stupid. No, he was too likely to slip up, to fail, and then, instead of splitting his soul, he might accidentally kill it. Soulless, Daniel's earthly guise, this dull body, would wander the earth in perpetuity, searching for its soul, but settling for the next best thing, Luce. It would haunt her until the day she died, and maybe after that. What Daniel needed was a partner. What he needed was impossible. He grunted and rolled over onto his back, squinting into the bright sun directly overhead.
See, a voice above him said. I told you we were in the right place.
I don't see why this... Another voice, a boy's this time. Is proof of us doing anything right.
Oh, come on, Miles. Don't let your beef with Daniel keep us from finding Luce. He obviously knows where she is.
The voices drew closer. Daniel opened his eyes in a squint and saw an arm slice the light of the sun, extending toward him.
Hey there, need a hand?
Shelby. Luce's Nephilim friend from Shoreline. And Miles, the one she'd kissed.
What are you two doing here?
Daniel sat up sharply, rejecting Shelby's offered hand. He rubbed his forehead and glanced behind him. The thing he'd collided with was the gray trunk of an olive tree.
What do you think we're doing here? We're looking for Luce.
Shelby gaped down at Daniel and wrinkled her nose.
What's wrong with you?
Nothing.
Daniel tried to stand up, but he was so dizzy he quickly lay down again. Cleaving, especially dragging his past body into another life, had made him sick. He fought his past from inside, slamming up against the edges, bruising his soul on bones and skin. He knew the Nephilim could sense that something unmentionable had happened to him.
Go home, trespassers. Whose announcer did you use to get here? Do you know how much trouble you could get yourselves in?
All of a sudden, something silver gleamed under his nose.
Take us to Luce.
Miles was pointing a star shot at Daniel's neck. The brim of his baseball cap hid his eyes, but his mouth was screwed in a nervous grimace. Daniel was dumbstruck.
You have a star shot.
Miles, Shelby whispered fiercely. What are you doing with that thing? The dull tip of the arrow quaked. Miles was clearly nervous.
You left it in the yard after the outcast left, he said to Daniel. Cam grabbed one, and in the chaos, no one noticed when I picked up this one. You took off after Luce, and we took off after you.
He turned to Shelby.
I thought we might need it. Self-defense.
Don't you dare kill him, Shelby said to Miles. You're an idiot.
No, Daniel said, very slowly sitting up. It's okay.
His mind was spinning. What were the odds? He had only seen this done once before. Daniel was no expert at cleaving. But his past writhed inside him. He couldn't go on like this. There was only one solution. Miles was holding it in his hands. But how could he get the boy to attack him without explaining everything? And could he trust the Nephilim? Daniel edged backward until his shoulders were against the tree trunk. He slid up it, holding both empty hands wide, showing Miles there was nothing to be afraid of.
You took fencing.
What? Miles looked bewildered.
At Shoreline, did you take a fencing class or not?
We all did. It was kind of pointless, and I wasn't all that good, but... That was all Daniel needed to hear.
On guard,
he shouted, drawing out his concealed starshot like a sword. Miles's eyes grew wide. In an instant, he'd raised his arrow as well.
Oh, crap, Shelby said, scurrying out of the way. You guys, seriously, stop!
The star shots were shorter than fencing foils, but a few inches longer than normal arrows. They were feather light, but as hard as diamonds, and if Daniel and Miles were very, very careful, the two of them might make it out of this alive. Somehow, with Miles's help, Daniel might cleave free of his past. He sliced through the air with his star shot, advancing a few steps toward the Nephilim. Miles responded, fighting off Daniel's blow, his arrow glancing hard toward the right. When the star shots clashed, they did not make the tinny clanks that fencing foils made. They made a deep, echoing whoomp that reverberated off the mountains and shook the ground under their feet.
Your fencing lesson wasn't pointless, Daniel said, as his arrow crisscrossed with Miles's in the air. It was to prepare for a moment like this.
A moment?
Miles grunted as he lunged forward, sweeping his star shot up until it slid against Daniel's in the air.
Like what?
Their arms strained. The star shots made a frozen X in the air.
I need you to release me from an earlier incarnation that I've cloven to my soul, Daniel said simply.
What the? Shelby murmured from the sidelines. Confusion flashed across Miles's face, and his arm faltered. His blade fell away, and his star shot clattered to the ground. He gasped and fumbled for it, looking back at Daniel, terrified.
I'm not coming after you, Daniel said. I need you to come after me.
He managed a competitive smirk.
Come on. You know you want to. You've wanted to for a long time.
Miles charged, holding the star shot like an arrow instead of a sword. Daniel was ready for him, dipping to one side just in time and spinning around to clash his star shot against Miles's. They were locked in each other's grip, Daniel with his star shot pointing past Miles's shoulder, using his strength to hold the Nephilim boy back, and Miles with his star shot inches away from Daniel's heart.
Are you going to help me? Daniel demanded. What's in it for us? Miles asked. Daniel had to think about this for a moment.
Luce's happiness, he said at last.
Miles didn't say yes, but he didn't say no.
No.
Daniel's voice faltered as he gave the instructions.
Very carefully, drag your blade in a straight line down the center of my chest. Do not pierce the skin or you will kill me.
Miles was sweating. His face was white. He glanced over at Shelby.
Do it, Miles, she whispered.
The star shot trembled. Everything was in this boy's hands. The blunt end of the star shot touched Daniel's skin and traveled down.
Oh, my God.
Shelby's lips curled up in horror.
He's molting.
Daniel could feel it, like a layer of skin was lifting off his bones. His past self's body was slowly cleaving from his own. The venom of separation coursed through him, threading deep into the fibers of his wings. The pain was so raw, it was nauseating, roiling deep inside him with great tidal swells. His vision clouded, ringing filled his ears. The star shot in his hand tumbled to the ground. Then, all at once, he felt a great shove and a sharp, cold breath of air. There was a long grunt and two thuds, and then his vision cleared. The ringing ceased. He felt lightness, simplicity, free. Miles lay on the ground below him, chest heaving. The star shot in Daniel's hand had disappeared. Daniel spun around to find a specter of his past self standing behind him, his skin gray and his body wraith-like, his eyes and teeth coal black, the star shot grasped in his hand. His profile wobbled in the hot wind, like the picture on a shorted-out television.
I'm sorry, Daniel said, reaching forward and clutching his past self at the base of his wings.
When Daniel lifted the shadow of himself off the ground, his body felt scant and insufficient. His fingers found the graying portal of the announcer through which both Daniels had traveled just before it fell apart.
Your day will come, he said.
Then he pitched his past self back into the announcer. He watched the void fading in the hot sun. The body made a drawn-out whistling sound as it tumbled into time, as if it were falling off a cliff. The announcer split into infinitesimal traces and was gone.
What the hell just happened? Shelby asked, helping Miles to his feet.
The Nephilim was ghostly white, gaping down at his hands, flipping them over and examining them as if he'd never seen them before. Daniel turned to Miles.
Thank you.
The Nephilim boy's blue eyes looked eager and terrified at the same time, as if he wanted to pump every detail out of Daniel about what had just happened, but didn't want to show his excitement. Shelby was speechless, which was an unprecedented event. Daniel had despised Miles until then. He'd been annoyed by Shelby, who had practically led the outcast straight toward Luce. But at that moment, under the olive tree, he could see why Luce had befriended both of them, and he was glad. A horn whined in the distance. Miles and Shelby jumped. It was a shofar, a sacred ram's horn that made a long, nasal note, often used to announce religious services and festivals. Until then, Daniel hadn't looked around enough to realize where they were. The three of them stood under the mottled shade of the olive tree at the crest of a low hill. In front of them, the hill sloped down to a wide, flat valley, tawny with the tall native grasses that had never been cut by man. In the middle of the valley was a narrow strip of green, where wildflowers grew alongside a narrow river. Just east of the riverbed, a small group of tents stood clustered together, facing a larger square structure made of white stones, with a latticed wooden roof. The blast of the shofar must have come from that temple. A line of women in colorful cloaks that fell to their ankles moved in and out of the temple. They carried clay jugs and bronze trays of food, as if in preparation for a feast.
Oh, Daniel said aloud, feeling a profound melancholy settle over him.
Oh, what? Shelby asked.
Daniel gripped the hood of Shelby's camouflage sweatshirt.
If you're looking for Luce here, you won't find her. She's dead. She died a month ago.
Miles nearly choked.
You mean the Luce from this lifetime, Shelby said. Not our Luce, right?
Our Luce, my Luce, isn't here either. She never knew this place existed,
so her announcers wouldn't bring her here. Yours wouldn't have either.
Shelby and Miles shared a glance.
You say you're looking for Luce, Shelby said. But if you know she isn't here, why are you still hanging around?
Daniel stared past them at the valley below.
Unfinished business.
Who is that? Miles asked, pointing at a woman in a long white dress. She was tall and willowy, with red hair that shimmered in the sunlight. Her dress was cut low, showing off a lot of golden skin. She was singing something soft and lovely, a tease of a song they could barely hear.
That's Lilith, Daniel said slowly. She's supposed to be married today.
Miles took a few steps along a path leading down from the olive tree toward the valley where the temple stood, about 100 feet below them, as if to get a better look.
Miles, wait! Shelby scrambled after him. This isn't like when we were in Vegas. This is some freaking other time or whatever. You can't just see a hot girl and go strolling in like you own the place.
She turned to look at Daniel for help.
Stay low, Daniel instructed them. Keep under the grass line, and stop when I say stop.
Carefully, they wound down the path, stopping at last near the bank of the river, downstream from the temple. All the tents in the small community had been strewn with garlands of marigolds and cassis flowers. They were in earshot of the voices of Lilith and the girls who were helping prepare her for the wedding. The girls laughed and joined in Lilith's song as they braided her long red hair into a wreath around her head. Shelby turned to Miles.
Doesn't she look kind of like Lilith from our class at Shoreline?
No, Miles said instantly.
He studied the bride for a moment.
Okay, maybe a little bit.
Weird.
Luce probably never mentioned her, Shelby explained to Daniel. She's a total bitch from hell.
It makes sense, Daniel said. Your Lilith might come from the same long line of evil women. They're all descendants of the original mother, Lilith. She was Adam's first wife.
Adam had more than one wife? Shelby gaped. What about Eve?
Before Eve.
Pre-Eve? No way.
Daniel nodded.
They weren't married very long when Lilith left him. It broke his heart. He waited for her a long time, but eventually he met Eve. And Lilith never forgave Adam for getting over her. She spent the rest of her days wandering the earth and cursing the family Adam had with Eve. And her descendants. Sometimes they start out all right, but eventually, well, the apple never really falls far from the tree.
That's messed up, Miles said, despite seeming hypnotized by Lilith's beauty. You're telling me that Lilith Clout, the girl who set my hair on fire in 9th grade, could be literally a bitch from hell? That all my voodoo toward her might have been justified?
I guess so, Daniel shrugged.
I've never felt so vindicated, Shelby laughed. Why wasn't this in any of our angelology books at Shoreline?
Shh, Miles pointed toward the temple. Lilith had left her maidens to complete the decorations for the wedding, strewing yellow and white poppies near the entrance to the temple, weaving ribbons and small chimes made of silver into the low branches of the oak trees, and walked away from them, west, toward the river, toward where Daniel, Shelby, and Miles were hiding. She carried a bouquet of white lilies. When she reached the riverbank, she plucked a few petals and scattered them over the water, still singing softly under her breath. Then she turned to walk north along the bank, toward a huge old carob tree with branches that drooped into the river. A boy sat beneath it, staring into the current. His long legs were propped up close to his chest, with one arm draped over them. The other arm was skipping stones into the water. His green eyes sparkled against his tan skin. His jet black hair was a little shaggy and damp from a recent swim.
Oh my God, that's...
Shelby's cry was cut off by Daniel's hand clamping over her mouth. This was the moment he'd been afraid of.
Yes, it's Cam, but it's not the Cam you know. This is an earlier Cam. We are thousands of years in the past.
Miles narrowed his eyes.
But he's still evil.
No, Daniel said. He's not.
Huh? Shelby asked.
There was a time when we were all part of one family. Cam was my brother. He was not evil, not yet. Maybe not even now.
Physically, the only difference between this Cam and the one Shelby and Miles knew was that his neck was bare of the sunburst tattoo he'd gotten from Satan when he'd thrown in his lot with Hell. Otherwise, Cam looked exactly as he did now. Except that this long-ago Cam's face was stiff with worry. It was an expression Daniel hadn't seen on Cam in millennia, probably not since this very moment. Lilith stopped behind Cam and wrapped her arms around his neck so that her hands rested just over his heart. Without turning or saying a word, Cam reached up and cupped her hands in his. Both of them closed their eyes, content.
"This seems really private," Shelby said. "Should we be... I feel weird."
"Then leave," Daniel said slowly. "Don't make a scene on your way out."
Daniel broke off. Someone was walking toward Cam and Lilith. The young man was tall and tanned, dressed in a long white robe and carrying a thick scroll of parchment. His blonde head was down, but it was obviously Daniel.
"I'm not leaving."
Miles's eyes locked on Daniel's past self.
"Wait, I thought we just sent that guy back into the announcers," Shelby said, confused.
"That was a later, early version of myself," Daniel said.
"A later, early version of myself, he says," Shelby snorted. "Exactly how many Daniels are there?"
"He came from 2,000 years in the future, beyond the moment where we are right now, which is still 1,000 years in the true past. That Daniel shouldn't have been here."
"We're 3,000 years in the past right now?" Miles asked.
"Yes, and you really shouldn't be."
Daniel stared Miles down.
"But that past version of me,"
he pointed at the boy who'd stopped next to Cam and Lilith,
"belongs here."
Across the river, Lilith smiled. "How are you, Danny?"
They watched as Danny knelt down next to the couple and unrolled the scroll of parchment.
Daniel remembered. It was their marriage license. He'd inscribed the whole thing himself in Aramaic. He was supposed to perform the ceremony. Cam had asked him months before.
Lilith and Cam read over the document. They were good together, Daniel remembered. She wrote songs for him and spent hours picking wildflowers, weaving them into his clothes. He gave all of himself to her. He listened to her dreams and made her laugh when she was sad. Both of them had their volatile sides, and when they argued, the whole tribe heard about it. But neither one of them was yet the dark thing they would become after they split up.
"This part right here," Lilith said, pointing to a line in the text. "It says we will be married by the river, but you know I want to be married in the temple, Cam."
Cam and Daniel shared a look. Cam reached for Lilith's hand.
"My love, I've already told you I cannot."
Something hot rose in Lilith's voice.
"You refuse to marry me under the eyes of God, in the only place where my family will approve of our union. Why?"
"Whoa," Shelby whispered on the other side of the stream.
"I see what's happening. Cam can't get married in the temple. He can't even set foot in the temple because..."
Miles began to whisper too.
"If a fallen angel enters the sanctuary of God..."
"The whole thing bursts into flames," Shelby finished.
The Nephilim were right, of course, but Daniel was surprised by his own frustration. Cam loved Lilith, and Lilith loved Cam. They had a chance to make their love work, and as far as Daniel was concerned, to hell with everything else. Why was Lilith so insistent on being married in the temple? Why couldn't Cam give her a good explanation for his refusal?
"I won't set foot in there,"
Cam pointed at the temple. Lilith was close to tears.
"Then you don't love me."
"I love you more than I ever thought possible, but it doesn't change a thing."
Lilith's thin body seemed to swell with rage. Could she sense that there was more to Cam's refusal than merely some wish to deny her? Daniel didn't think so. She clenched her fists and let out a long, shrill scream. It seemed to shake the earth. Lilith grabbed Cam's wrists and pinned him against the tree. He didn't even struggle.
"My grandmother never liked you."
Her arms trembled as she held him down.
"She always said the most terrible things, and I always defended you. Now I see it, in your eyes and your soul.
Her eyes bored into him.
Say it.
Say what? Cam asked, horrified.
You're a bad man. I know what you are.
It was clear that Lilith didn't know. She was grasping at the rumors that flew around the community, that he was evil, a wizard, a member of the occult. All she wanted to hear was the truth from Cam. Daniel knew that Cam could tell Lilith, but he wouldn't. He was afraid to.
I am none of the bad things anyone says I am, Lilith, Cam said.
It was the truth, and Daniel knew it, but it sounded so much like a lie. Cam was on the brink of the worst decision he would ever make. This was it, the moment that broke Cam's heart so that it rotted into something black.
Lilith,
Danny pleaded with her, pulling her hands away from Cam's throat.
He is not.
Danny, Cam warned.
Nothing you can say will fix this.
That's right. It's broken.
Lilith let go, and Cam fell backward into the dirt. She picked up their marriage contract and flung it into the river. It spun slowly in the current and sank.
I hope I live 1,000 years and have 1,000 daughters, so there will always be a woman who can curse your name.
She spat in his face, then turned and ran back to the temple, her white dress flowing behind her like a sail. Cam's face turned as white as Lilith's wedding robe. He reached for Danny's hand to help himself up.
Do you have a star shot, Danny?
No. Danny's voice shook.
Don't talk like that. You'll get her back, or else... I was naive to think I could have gotten away with loving a mortal woman.
If you'd only told her, Danny said.
Told her? What happened to me? To all of us? The fall and everything since?
Cam leaned closer to Danny.
Maybe she's right about me. You heard her. The whole village thinks I am a demon, even if they won't use the word.
They know nothing. Cam turned away.
All this time I've been trying to deny it, but love is impossible, Danny.
It is not.
It is, for souls like ours.
You'll see. You may hold out longer than I could, but you'll see. Both of us will eventually have to choose.
No. So quick to protest, brother.
Cam squeezed Danny's shoulder.
It makes me wonder about you. Don't you ever think about it? Crossing over?
Danny shrugged away.
I think about her and only her. I count the seconds until she'll be with me again. I choose her as she chooses me.
How lonely.
It's not lonely, Danny barked. It's love. The love you want for yourself, too.
I meant I'm lonely, and far less noble than you are. Any day, I fear a change is coming on.
No.
Now Danny moved toward Cam.
You wouldn't.
Cam reared away and spat.
Not all of us are lucky enough to be bound to our lover by a curse.
Daniel remembered this empty insult. It had made him furious. But still, he shouldn't have said what came next.
Go then. You won't be missed.
He regretted it instantly, but it was too late. Cam rolled back his shoulders and threw out his arms. When his wings bloomed at his sides, they sent a burst of hot wind rippling across the grass where Daniel, Shelby, and Miles were hiding. The three of them peered up. His wings were massive and glowing and...
Wait a minute, Shelby whispered. They're not gold.
Miles blinked.
How can they not be gold?
Of course the Nephilim would be confused. The division of wing color was as clear as night and day. Gold for demons, silver or white for everyone else. And the Cam they knew was a demon. Daniel was in no mood to explain to Shelby why Cam's wings were pure, bright, white, as radiant as diamonds, glistening like sun-kissed snow. This long-ago Cam had not crossed over yet. He was merely on the brink. That day, Lilith lost Cam as a lover, and Daniel lost him as a brother. From this day on, they would be enemies. Could Daniel have stopped him? What if he hadn't spun away from Cam and unfurled his own wings like a shield, the way he watched Danny do now? He should have. He burned to burst forth from the bushes and stop Cam now. How much could be different?
Cam's and Danny's wings did not yet have the tortured magnetic pull toward each other. All that repelled them in this moment was a stubborn difference of opinion, a philosophical sibling rivalry. Both angels rose from the ground at the same time, each facing a different direction. So when Danny soared east across the sky and Cam soared west, the three anachronisms hiding in the grass were the only ones to see the gleam of gold bite into Cam's wings, like a sparkling lightning bolt. 17. Written in bone. Yin, China, Qingming. Approximately April 4, 1046 BCE. At the far end of the announcer's tunnel was an engulfing brightness. It kissed her skin like a summer morning at her parents' house in Georgia. Luce plunged toward it. Unbridled glory. That was what Bill had called the burning light of Daniel's true soul. Merely looking upon Daniel's pure angelic self had made an entire community of people at the Mayan sacrifice spontaneously combust, including Ishkuat, Luce's past self. But there had been a moment of pure wonder, just before she died, when Luce had felt closer to Daniel than she ever had before. She didn't care what Bill said. She recognized the glow of Daniel's soul. She had to see it again. Maybe there was some way she could live through it. She had to at least try. She burst out of the announcer into the cold emptiness of a colossal bedroom. The chamber was at least 10 times bigger than any room Luce had ever seen, and everything about it was lavish. The floors were crafted of smoothest marble and covered by enormous rugs made of whole animal skins, one of which had an intact tiger's head. 4 timber pillars held up a finely thatched gabled ceiling. The walls were made of woven bamboo. Near the open window was an enormous canopy bed with sheets of green-gold silk. A tiny telescope rested on the window's ledge. Luce picked it up, parting the gold silk curtain to peer outside. The telescope was heavy and cold when she held it up to her eye. She was in the center of a great walled city, looking down from a second story. A maze of stone roadways connected crammed, ancient-looking wattle and daub structures. The air was warm and smelled softly of cherry blossoms. A pair of orioles crossed the blue sky. Luce turned to Bill. "Where are we?" This place seemed as foreign as the world of the Mayans, and just as far back in time. He shrugged and opened his mouth to speak, but then... "Shh," Luce whispered. Sniffling. Someone was crying soft, hushed tears. Luce turned toward the noise. There, through an archway on the far side of the room, she heard the sound again. Luce moved toward the archway, sliding along the stone floor in her bare feet. The sobbing echoed, beckoning her. A narrow walkway opened up into another cavernous chamber. This one was windowless, with low ceilings, dimly lit by the glow of a dozen small bronze lamps. She could make out a large stone basin and a small lacquered table stocked with black pottery vials of aromatic oils that gave the whole room a warm and spicy smell. A gigantic carved jade wardrobe stood in the corner of the room. Thin green dragons etched into its face sneered at Luce, as if they knew everything she didn't. And in the center of the chamber, a dead man lay sprawled on the floor. Before Luce could see anything more, she was blinded by a bright light moving toward her. It was the same glow she'd sensed from the other side of the announcer. "What is that light?" she asked Bill.
"That... you see that?"
Bill sounded surprised.
"That's your soul. Yet another way for you to recognize your past lives when they appear physically different from you."
He paused.
"You've never noticed it before?"
"This is the first time, I think."
"Huh," Bill said. "Well, that's a good sign. You're making progress."
Luce felt heavy and exhausted all of a sudden. "I thought it was going to be Daniel." Bill cleared his throat, like he was going to say something, but he didn't. The glow burned brightly for another heartbeat, then snapped out so suddenly she couldn't see for a moment until her eyes adjusted.
"What are you doing here?" a voice asked roughly.
Where the light had been, in the center of the room,
was a thin, pretty Chinese girl, about 17, too young and too elegant to be standing over a dead man's body. Dark hair hung to her waist, contrasting with her floor-length white silk robe. Dainty as she was, she seemed the kind of girl who didn't shy away from a fight.
"So that's you," Bill's voice said in Luce's ear. "Your name is Lu Xin, and you lived outside the capital city of Yin. We're at the close of the Shang Dynasty, something like 1000 BCE, in case you want to make a note for your scrapbook."
Luce probably seemed crazy to Lu Xin, barging in here wearing a singed animal hide and a necklace made out of bone, her hair wild and tangled snarl. How long had it been since she'd looked in a mirror, had a bath? Plus, she was talking to an invisible gargoyle. But then again, Lu Xin was standing vigil over a dead guy, giving Luce don't-mess-with-me eyes, so she seemed a little crazy herself. Oh, boy. Luce hadn't noticed the jade knife with the turquoise-studded handle, or the small pond of blood in the middle of the marble floor.
"What do I—" she started to ask Bill.
"You." Lu Xin's voice was surprisingly strong. "Help me hide his body."
The dead man's hair was white around his temples. He looked about 60 years old, lean and muscular underneath many elaborate robes and embroidered cloaks.
I don't really think—" "As soon as they learn the king is dead, you and I will be dead too."
"What?" Luce asked. "Me?"
"You, me, most of the people inside these walls. Where else will they find the 1000 sacrificial bodies that must be buried with the despot?"
The girl wiped her cheeks dry with slender, jade-ringed fingers.
"Will you help me or not?"
At the girl's request, Luce moved to help pick up the king's feet. Lu Xin readied herself to lift him under his arms.
"The king," Lu said, spouting out the old Shang words as if she'd spoken them forever.
"Was he—" "It is not as it appears,"
Lu Xin grunted under the weight of the body. The king was heavier than he looked.
"I did not kill him. At least not—" she paused. "Physically. He was dead when I walked into the room."
She sniffed.
"He stabbed himself in the heart. I used to say he did not have one, but he has proven me wrong."
Luce looked at the man's face. One of his eyes was open. His mouth was twisted. He looked as if he'd left this world in agony.
"Was he your father?"
By then, they'd reached the huge jade wardrobe. Lu Xin wedged its door open with her hip, took a step backward, and dropped her half of the body inside.
"He was to be my husband," she said coldly. "And a horrible one at that. The ancestors approved of our marriage, but I did not. Rich, powerful older men are nothing to be grateful for if one enjoys romance."
She studied Luce, who lowered the king's feet slowly to the floor of the wardrobe.
"What part of the plains do you come from that word of the king's betrothal had not reached you?"
Lu Xin had noticed Luce's Mayan clothing. She picked at the hem of the short brown skirt.
"Did they hire you to perform at our wedding? Are you some sort of dancer? A clown?"
"Not exactly."
Luce felt her cheeks flush as she tugged the skirt lower on her hips.
"Look, we can't just leave his body here. Someone's going to find out. I mean, he's the king, right? And there's blood everywhere."
Lu Xin reached into the dragon wardrobe and pulled out a crimson silk robe. She dropped to her knees and tore a large strip of fabric from it. It was a beautiful, soft silk garment with small black blossoms embroidered around the neckline. But Lu Xin didn't think twice about using it to mop up the blood on the floor. She snatched a second blue robe and tossed it to Luce to help with the mopping.
"Okay," Luce said. "Well, there's still that knife."
She pointed at the gleaming bronze dagger, coated up to the hilt with the king's blood. In a flash, Lu Xin slipped the knife inside a fold of her robe. She looked up at Luce as if to say, "Anything else?"
"What's that over there?"
Luce pointed to what looked like the top of a small turtle's shell. She'd seen it fall out of the king's hand when they moved his body. Lu Xin was on her knees. She tossed down the sopping, blood-stained rag and cupped the shell between her hands.
"The oracle bone," she said softly. more important than any king.
What is it?
This holds answers from the deity above.
Luce stepped closer, kneeling to see the object that had had such an effect on the girl. The oracle bone was nothing more than a tortoise shell, but it was small and polished and pristine. When Luce leaned closer, she saw that someone had painted something in soft black strokes on the smooth underside of the shell. Is Lu Xin true to me, or does she love another? Fresh tears welled in Lu Xin's eyes, a crack in the cool resolve she'd shown to Luce.
He asked the ancestors, she whispered, closing her eyes. They must have told him of my deceit. I could not help myself.
Daniel. She must be talking about Daniel. A secret love she'd hidden from the king. But she hadn't been able to hide it well enough. Luce's heart went out to Lu Xin. She understood with every fiber of her soul precisely what the girl was feeling. They shared a love that no king could take away, that nobody could extinguish. A love more powerful than nature.